Greetings, Biamches.
What was that?
I don't know. I wasn't ready.
I told you I was pressing record.
Yeah, but I was braced. I was ready for braced, you to
braced,
start.
Braced.
Well, braced is the wrong word. I was ready for you to start. I was in listening mode.
Oh.
Which is very unusual to your ears, I'm sure.
Unusual.
But it's something that I've been learning in recent months, in the recent 2 years, is learning to listen better.
Hello, everyone. Sounds that can't be made. We are sort of nearly ready to finish our retrospective of it, aren't we?
We are. Someone did say to us, maybe we'll finish the album by the time the new album comes out. And that's an excellent point. Maybe we will. We can make that our goal.
I mean, from my point of view, I wanted to finish it this episode. Someone has still not finished her notes.
No, I know. I'm nearly finished.
What have you got to say?
I just want to look over the lyrics a bit more.
Oh.
I'm ready to do Montreal, and it's the last 3 songs then.
Which is weird, because I've got barely anything to say about Montreal.
No, I'm ready to talk about Montreal.
Well, we may talk about Montreal this episode, but
yeah.
There was some other stuff I kind of wanted to touch upon before we get to that.
Sure thing.
Sure thing. Yeah, sure thing. Oh,
what? Why are you cringing or just stretching?
Well, I am stretching, but also cringing. So cringe stretching, cretching.
Okay.
Stringing.
Yeah.
What are you doing with your hands?
I want to just slightly move this.
Okay, I'm leaving it all in. I've just started leaving stuff in. Look, back in the early days of this podcast, I used to cut so much out. Like, all the awkward pauses, every and ah, and it used to take forever. Now
I'm happy to do it. Yeah, no, I love doing that.
I don't care anymore.
I'm happy to edit out all the stuff, but then you say I edit out too much.
Well, you did make it really weird.
I made it pacey, Paul.
No, you didn't. You made it sound like we're two aliens who didn't need to breathe. But yeah, so I don't know. I think people.
Yes, it's
we
fine.
Talk like
this
normal
is,
people.
This is like how a real conversation would go mostly.
Well, we were a lot more stilted in the early days.
Were we?
Yeah, we were, because we weren't.
I can't imagine that I'm not stilted now.
Don't be ridiculous. You're a natural broadcaster. So, what do we want to talk? Well, firstly, let's shout out to, if you remember last week, we discussed whether, among other things, whether Script for a Jester's Tear would have worked as a single.
Yes!
And although we can't play it on the podcast due to EMI reasons, it's not EMI anymore, is it? Who owns it now? Is it Warner Chappell or something?
Oh, yeah, because Fish sold it.
No, Fish did not sell EMI.
His rights, no.
Fish did not sell EMI.
He didn't sell EMI.
It's got nothing to do with Fish. It's got nothing to do with Fish.
I thought he sold his rights.
He did, but that's not the reason we can't play Script for Jester's Tear on this podcast. It's because it's pre-racket and pre... You know, the band owning all their rights. Yes, so we sort of talked about whether Script for a Jester's Tear would work as a single.
Yeah.
And one of our incredibly clever and talented listeners did a single edit, a 3.5 minute long single edit of Script for a Jester's Tear.
He did. All right. Hang on. I was just looking that up.
I thought you had it queued up.
No, because I thought you did, because you were talking so... You were talking so seamlessly. See, this is all.
Yeah, do you know why I was talking seamlessly? Because you were fannying around on your phone.
Well, so I thought.
I assumed you were queuing it up.
I thought I don't need.
I was dragging my waffle out so that you could continue queuing it up. But now I find out you were just like texting or something. And she's still texting.
No, I'm not texting.
What are you doing?
I'm looking.
She's looking, everyone. Now I've got to fill this, because I can't be doing with editing bits out.
Well, just tell
not
me
on
what...
Not on my age. I don't self-edit anymore. Anyone who's ever listened to this podcast will know that. Wow, I'm really having a waffle. Right, I'm going to find it. I'm going to look in our Gmail and find it.
That's where I'm looking.
Good God. Right. Okay, now it's a race to see who's going to find this.
You'll find it first, because I'm slow. Oh, found it. Okay. Right. Sorry.
Go on.
Shall I, what's the time so I can edit
No, I've left all that in.
Okay. So our very talented listener, start again. Our very talented listener is called Simon Heldreich, and he has a podcast. He's got a Genesis podcast.
A good one.
Called The Revelation Station.
That's right.
Yes. Anyway, he did two edits. He did a 5-minute edit and a 3-minute edit.
Yeah, well, he did the 12-inch version and and the 7-inch version.
And
it works.
Do you know
it
what?
Works.
I was like, I don't know if the song, it would lose some of its magic being cut down. And it didn't even in the 3-minute version.
No, I mean,
it worked.
For me, as good an edit as the 7-inch version of Kaylee.
Yeah, it's like, why didn't they do that back in the day? Because that would have been played on the radio. It was a really energetic, I was going to say punchy. Did you say punchy? I don't know, but it's a really like, yeah, punchier version and perfect for radio play.
Also, I think it, given where Marillion were at in those days and the audience that they were catering to, I think it did a great job of going, this is who we are.
Yeah.
You know, with that sort of pastoral keyboard intro, which is still there in the single version.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any way we're ever able to share it. But
Well, otherwise, maybe go and listen to...
The Revelation Station. Don't look it up on your phone again. Remember these things.
I haven't got a memory.
Simon Heldreich and the Revelation Station.
And maybe if you ask Simon nicely, he'll let you have a listen.
So Sanya is now promoting copyright theft and the distribution of stolen materials. So that's our podcast shut down.
It's not.
My wife in prison.
Wait, no, but it's not. It's not for profit, and it's not. It's like the same as making a collage out of images you find on Google,
so
making a vision board from it and then showing your friend. You're not selling it.
If you steal something from someone and then just give it to someone else for free, which isn't for profit, that's all right, is it?
But I'm saying, like, okay, let's say you buy a magazine and you cut out the pictures and you make a vision board and then you show your friend.
What?
Is that copyright theft? You're not selling it. You're not, like, promoting
it
as your own work.
That's completely different.
You're just, like, taking pieces of it and altering it for personal use.
That's completely different. That's completely different.
Well, how?
Well, also, you're talking about something that potentially could be mass distribution. Also, if you, you know... 200 people, I mean, I admit, no one is... Look, this is stupid. No one is going to contact Simon who hasn't already owned or bought a copy of Script for Jester's Tear.
Yeah.
But regardless, not saying we should be actively promoting.
Okay, I am unactively, I'm passively promoting. Jeez. I'm passively demoting
anyway,
the idea.
This is a good segue to what I wish to discuss next.
Oh, is it?
Going back to the early days of Marillion and the later days, you'll see.
Oh,
you'll see.
So the days, not the middle ones.
Yeah, them as well.
Okay.
All the days.
All right.
But look, everyone, what are we, 10 minutes into this? I'm trying really hard not to say I'm ill. Okay, I've tried so hard.
What was going on?
That's what's been going on, right?
That was just you, like... holding yourself back.
Last month, I had flu. Okay, I had 2 weeks where I felt all right and I'm ill again. I've got a cough, I've got a sore throat and I've got a cold.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with me. I'm run down, clearly. Very stressed at the minute because my mother's in hospital and we're trying to get her into a nursing home.
Yeah, and she's been in there for like 3.5 weeks and there's been no movement, but it's very, very worrying and... stressful.
Yes.
And then on top of that, we decided to go into a service station on the motorway,
which
seems to be every time we visit it, we get ill.
Every single time.
Even washing our hands and disinfecting our hands, we still somehow manage to
get ill. We're assuming it's
ill.
The service station. It's either the service station or our grandson. Because
yeah,
they're the only
toddler.
Two places we go.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I mean, he is just basically like a walking tap, but it's constantly
nose.
On, but yeah, it's like snot coming out.
Yeah, so it's true. Could have got it from him. He goes to nursery, so he can pick up any old bug.
So I mean, again, this is my immune system's way of telling me to have a holiday.
Yes.
But life doesn't want that.
Okay, if we're going to have an interlude of health whinging, I also would like to put it out there, because I didn't want to mention it, but it's taking a lot of concentration to listen to you because I have tinnitus that has returned really loudly.
And what
so it's
gave
just
you
like,
tinnitus? What gave you tinnitus?
In my ear.
Where did you get that from, tinnitus?
What do you mean?
Well, when did it start? What do you mean? Where did you get it?
Year.
Oh, did you buy that? What shop did you get that from? did you get that on Amazon?
It started exactly a year ago, last April, when I got COVID.
Yes.
And it lasted for like 6 months, and then it went away for a few months, and now it's decided to come back.
What is interesting, though, and I think we should put a pin in this, you got COVID at the Marillion weekend, didn't you?
Yes.
So, and then you got tinnitus afterwards. So, you know...
What?
I'm just saying, you don't know it was the COVID that gave you the tinnitus. Could have been the gigs. I'm just saying.
I don't think so. It's only in one ear.
You know, we already know Marillion, in a roundabout way, caused the Breen Sands Pontins ceiling collapse. They've made you have tinnitus. So,
no, because I didn't.
I'm just saying.
I didn't have it at the Marillion weekend. It decided to show up afterwards.
Yeah, well, after the Marillion weekend. Yeah, so what I'm saying is we all think, you know, officially, you know, as the hosts of a Marillion podcast, Marillion are a force for good in this world. But I'm starting to ask questions whether or not. You know, we can really trust
me sitting here taking it seriously going, no, it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Andy Edwards. Who is Andy Edwards, you might ask? Andy Edwards was formerly the drummer in IQ, the neo-prog band who came up at the same time as Marillion in the early 80s.
What's the difference between prog and neo-prog?
Prog was the 70s. Then punk came along and made prog a dirty word. Then neo-prog was the resurgence of prog in the early 80s.
So Marillion, is Marillion neo-prog?
Marillion were considered neo-prog, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But now they're more prog pop.
It was bands like IQ, Palace, Pendragon, Twelfth Night, and Marillion.
Oh.
They all kind of appeared at the same time, almost as a reaction to punk. You know, punk was kind of a reaction to prog, and then, this is a real simplification in music history because you also had disco during that time, and then New Wave and New Romantic and stuff. But yeah, prog was certainly, I think it was an audience that had never really heard of those 70s bands, getting into bands that had heard those bands and, you know, listened to sort of their, I don't know, older brothers' record collections.
Yeah,
sorry if that sounds sexist, but let's be honest, it was their older brother.
Do you reckon, what would you call, because you've noticed that recently there seems to be a resurgence in prog style music.
I think there has been for a while. This is not
so new. Would they be classified as like that what's that band of like eight females or something, and remember that they dress
females
in...
eight females. All right, Andrew Tate.
What am I meant to say?
I mean, that's always a bit, females,
eight girls, eight women.
Okay, yeah
eight
okay.
People.
Eight women, yeah, go on.
No, now I feel self-conscious and I don't know what to say now. And they wear kind of like, oh, they did that song that was sort of like...
You're really thrown, aren't you? Because I called you Andrew Tate.
Dinner. Yeah, I don't want to be Andrew Tate.
Oh, the Last Dinner Party.
That's it.
They're brilliant. Yeah, I love them.
But they're very prog style.
I think so.
Aren't they?
Really proggy.
So would they be classified... And they're, like, my 22-year-old daughter's into them. So
oh, really?
It's
she
like,
got into them now?
I think so.
I'd like to think that I introduced her
did
to
you?
Them.
Did you?
Yeah. They won the BBC Sound of 2024.
And even their videos are quite proggy.
Yeah, they're really good. I recommend
they're really
any
good.
Of them to
sorry if my description of them was unsatisfactory.
they're kind
of unsavory. But yeah, so
they're kind of baroque, aren't they?
Yeah,
kind
baroque.
Of,
that's the word. Baroque. Yeah. Yes.
But with a sort of they're sort that's of indie baroque.
Indie baroque. That's the perfect word.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that is the perfect word. So, like, what would you call them if neo prog was early 80s? What is modern neo-neo-neo-prog.
Like, I think a lot of modern music is just rock.
And oh, you just classify it rock.
Broad church these days. It's not like, you know, yes, you still have magazines like Prog, you know, which, and what I find interesting, the latest issue of Prog features Elbow.
Oh, wow.
But you wouldn't find Elbow described as prog in Mojo, for
like
instance.
A prog artist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always thought Elbow had elements of prog. I've always thought.
Oh, I love Elbow.
And I always thought Guy Garvey. By the way, everyone, this is hilarious. We saw, I saw Guy Garvey once on a train. When I told Senya about it, she was really confused because she thought Guy Garvey's name was Elbow.
I know. I still
she thought it was just him.
I still think of him as Elbow.
It's, wow.
In my head, his name is Elbow.
But they are, yeah, Guy Garvey, I've always thought he sounded a bit like Peter Gabriel, his voice. And then inevitably, I think Elbow.
He's got an amazing voice.
When Peter Gabriel did his Scratch My Back and I'll Scratch Yours covers thing, I think Elbow did one of his songs. Did he cover an Elbow song? Possibly, but yeah,
I'd love to see them in concert.
Yeah, we should, because their new album.
I need to catch up with their new album as well.
Their new album. I wasn't sure about it when I first heard it. I thought, I don't know. And then,
in what way?
It's quite rhythmic, but uses sort of quite. This is actually relevant to some of what I'm going to be talking about. Sort of quite. I don't know. The rhythms are sort of quite. Some of them are sort of almost African drums.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
But it's not as the songs. There are none of those sort of big sweeping epics that Elbow do. You know, like was it One Day Like
This? So they're shorter. I love One Day Like This.
But the more I listened to it, I really liked it. It's got a couple of tracks on there as well, which are like sort of 20 seconds long or something like that. It's very. What are you doing on
I'm
your phone?
Up the name
it's
of the
so
album.
I could have told you.
No, sorry.
Not in the middle of the podcast, Sanya. My God. Do you remember once we did an episode of this where you had an absolute meltdown because I was looking at my notes rather than looking at you
sorry.
While you were talking, right? That is worse.
You're right. Yes.
That is worse.
You're right. I would like to find out the name of the album.
Right. But remember it for after. That is worse. I'm talking and you're literally off on a different.
Well, no, I wanted to tell. You're absolutely right. That's a terrible behaviour.
You had a real go at me that time.
I felt really sad.
When all I was doing was
sorry
like listening
if I made
to you,
feel like that.
While I was listening to you while queuing up the follow on. To what the point you were talking about that time. What that is, that's you just like you're following your own self-interest.
No, I wanted to tell our listeners what the new Elbow album was called.
Audio Vertigo.
There you go.
You could have said, Paul, what's the name of the new album instead of going on your phone?
I assumed that your
Audio
memory,
Vertigo.
Like mine, wouldn't remember.
I just assumed
you wouldn't remember.
It's very good.
Audio Vertigo,
and
okay.
And the lyrics. Oh, my God, he's such a good lyricist.
I know.
Right, back to the topic in hand. Andy Edwards.
Yes.
Former drummer with IQ, the neo-prog band. That's how we've got very... because you didn't know what neo-prog was.
Mm-hmm.
And Frost, another prog band, more recent prog band. I think neo-prog tends, for me now, I tend to think of neo-prog as those prog bands who are reminiscent of kind of 70s prog. For instance, Transatlantic.
Okay, so you wouldn't class like...
Stephen Wilson as neo-prog.
You wouldn't
class him
as neo-prog.
Yeah.
Oh, you just class him as straight prog.
Yeah, prog rock. In the best way possible, Stephen Wilson, because he's progressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say generally I like prog, less of a fan of neo prog. But IQ, I was a fan of. IQ, I have seen live many times. I did stop going to see them live because I liked them less as time went on, let's put it that way. So Andy Edwards was their drummer for about 4 years or something in the mid-noughties. He now is a...
Oh, so he wasn't an original member of IQ?
No. I think their original drummer was a guy called Paul Cook, who is now their drummer again. But IQ have had this weird... revolving door of sort of members where some leave and some rejoin and another guy comes in. they are... how do I talk about IQ? What's the best way? Do I need to talk about IQ now? Or should I talk about Andy Edwards? No, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's talk about Andy Edwards. Andy okay. Edwards is now like a music tutor for music school. Because as we discover when our daughter, because she went to BIM, the Institute of Music in...
British Institute of Music.
Yeah, in Brighton. She went there, that was her university. And, you'd get, like, one of her tutors was the guitarist in the Britpop band Sleeper. It's sort of really, really bizarre. You know, you kind of get all these kind of musicians and former musicians as tutors. So Andy Edwards is that now, but he's also got a YouTube channel where he talks about music. He also has Hammer Horror Villain hair. His hair is quite something. It's kind of a bit Grand Moff Tarkin-y, sweatback, kind of big, kind of...
You're tempting me to look him up, but I wouldn't dare now because
really
I don't want
rude.
To... Huh?
It'd be really rude.
It would be really rude, but I don't know who Grand Moff Tarkin is, apart from that he's in Star Wars.
Peter Cushing, he was the bad
Again,
guy...
Again, another name, I've got no idea.
He was the bad guy who was sort of in charge of Darth Vader in Star Wars, on the Death Star. Peter Cushing, very thin, pinched face.
Oh,
deep cheekbones.
Well, he's got small hair.
Nah, you have a look
the
at
The slicked
hair.
Back.
Yeah, kind of, Buffon.
Is it Buffon?
This is probably off topic. I don't know. I mean, this might
not be
relevant.
This could
be
solved by me looking up the picture.
This might not be relevant because it isn't. His hair actually isn't relevant to any of what I've got to say. I'm just saying. So he did his videos get, a couple of thousand views. He's got like 20,000 subscribers on YouTube, something like that. But he recently did a video called 10 Most Underrated Bands in History. And at number 3 was Marillion.
Ah.
I've said it completely wrong. Overrated bands in history.
Oh, that changes. That changes everything, Paul.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, 10 most overrated bands in history. Completely different.
In history.
Yeah.
All of history. Yeah.
Now, what I will tell you is that some of those bands on that list include the Beach Boys.
Wow. So he's not just limiting this to Prague.
No, Queen.
I'm sorry? He's put Queen as an overrated band?
Yeah.
And the Beach Boys.
And at number 1, Pink Floyd.
What were his reasons?
He did say that he likes a lot of these bands.
Yeah.
But he still thinks they're overrated.
I mean, it's pretty good for Marillion if Pink Floyd's number 1 and they got to number 3. That's...
Well,
who was number 2?
I can't remember. No, Queen was number 2.
So Pink Floyd, Queen, and then Marillion.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't complain.
I mean, they're in good company.
Yeah.
It's by far and away the biggest video on his channel.
Right.
And it's pure clickbait. He even does, when he gets to Pink Floyd, a long rant. Or not van, but like mocking the audience, kind of going, "Yeah, I can't believe he's hit the dead." He goes off bloody ages doing it. I had to skip through it because it's just like he's in quite an echoey room, and he's shouting Brummie accent. Brummie, by the way, for our international audiences, is Birmingham. It's actually one of my favourite accents, but it sounded like a sort of Brummie Davos.
Can you give us an example of a Brummie accent?
Oh, God, sorry,
or is that
Brummies.
Racist?
Is it racist? That well known race, the Brummies. I can't laugh, I'm gonna cough. Sanya's having a drink, using that interlude as an opportunity. Ozzy Osbourne, there you go. Ozzy Osbourne is a Brummie accent.
Sharon,
racist.
that was one of my favourite shows when I was younger.
Anyway,
the Osbournes.
I think we can all debate whether Marillion are overrated. I mean, it's ridiculous to me given that they're one of the most derided bands in history.
Right.
They've got like their reputation, especially in the UK, is beyond laughable. You know, the gulf between how brilliant we know they are and what most average people think they are. And in America, for instance, they're barely known at all. So to call them overrated is just absurd. However,
right, yes,
he qualified his reasons.
Okay.
And it confirmed for me some of what I've long suspected, that Meridian were kind of the black sheep of Neo-Prog.
Oh, interesting.
And not very popular among their peers.
Why?
Well...
Wait, are you talking early Meridian, or are you talking the whole
no, that
span
scene,
of
no,
time?
That Neo... Well, still today, but that Neo-Prog scene. I mean, he said... I'll just tell you what Andy Edwards said. He starts off by saying, you know, yes, I've got a bit of prejudice. It's good to have a bit of contempt and prejudice. There, I've done the accent. And shout for your own team, because IQ are my mates. Sorry, Brummies, I'm going to do it. I can't, because I can't, I just can't think of these words in front of me without thinking of his accent. And he says that throughout his videos, you might have noticed on my channel, there's a bit of disdain for Meridian. Disdain.
So this isn't the first time he's shown disdain.
Apparently not. I mean, I'll talk about one of his other videos in a minute, but I did have a look at it through, and yeah, but I wasn't going to watch him. So he's just a man ranting on all of them. His reasoning was, he described, you know, the neo-prog scene in the early 80s, and that he heard Misplaced Child and went, oh, they're just a non-virtuoso version of Genesis. With 80s production. And he says they were theatric, but not in the way Peter Gabriel was. That's a terrible accent. Sorry, I don't know what that's even become.
That's kind of morphing into South African.
Yeah, okay, fine. Well, he might become South African.
Okay.
As I go. and then Katie came out. Basically, they were the only neo-prog band to have any success, Meridian. All the others, they're still sort of rumbling on, but none of them, for none of them, it became a long-term job.
None of them were as huge as Meridian.
None of them. Not even close.
Right.
Not even close. IQ...
So there might be a little bit of, like, envy.
Well, I'll get to that. But okay. He sort of said, so Katie came out and he said, I've never known a band, never known a band to make mass... Devil Dogs. The Devil Dogs are coming, Senya. Devil Dogs.
Look, I can't let it go. What does non-virtuoso mean?
Right.
From about 5 minutes ago.
Sorry, I was... Thanks for not letting me go down that path of being my South African character, which might be racist. I don't know. Non-virtuoso mean it's actually the core of what I'm getting to.
Oh, I see. This, okay, I'm glad I asked then.
It's actually at the core of it. But he said, so I never known a band to amass so much success by directly copying Genesis. Then he said, then that guy, what's his name? H joins. And they become a kind of middle of the road, well executed dad rock band. Did rock. And then apparently he did a video of the 10 perfect prog bands, and he got loads of comments saying, oh, you should do Misplaced Childhood or whatever. And he was like, well, how can it be perfect if it was done by Meridian?
Oh.
So.
Prog bands or prog songs?
Prog albums. Sorry.
Prog albums. Sorry. Right. Sorry.
So put a pin in the non-virtuoso thing, because going back now, I know I'm jumping around it, but I'm making a point. Back in about 1988-89, my friend Sebastian James and I decided we were going to start a magazine.
Oh, nice.
And that magazine didn't have a name, but it had a logo, and the logo was just a big question mark.
Uh-huh.
And we decided the magazine was called Why. It was like really wanky and pretentious. But at the time, it was like...
How old were you at the time?
What was I, 17, 18?
Oh.
I remember it was going to be like, so I'll get to that in a minute. So I'm really jumping around. I'm not well. Yeah, I didn't want to skip another week. We've had enough time off. I'm forcing myself to do this. I don't even want to. Do. That's a joke. That's a joke. I don't even want to do this. It's a joke. It's a joke. Yeah, it was around the time that it was sort of the renaissance of British comics, graphic novels and all of that. So you had magazines like Deadline. So you'd get magazines that had bands interviews and things alongside comic strips. And that's what we wanted Y to be. So we put, or I put an ad in, there was a, was it Comics International or something, a comics trade paper, put an ad in there asking for cartoonists and sort of said, if you want to contribute, you know, kind of send us some samples. We actually had like Lou Stringer, who's like a really famous cartoonist, kind of sort of send us stuff. And
it's amazing.
We put together, we were going to put together a dummy issue with like some cartoons by me. And I remember we had a meeting with a couple of, at my house or my parents' house, and a meeting with a couple of these young cartoonists. Well, we just, it was really unprofessional. We sat around drinking beer out of cans, but with through straws.
Is that so you got drunk faster?
I don't know why we did that. Anyway, so in, we wanted to feature music as well, but of course we weren't indie kids like all the staff of like Deadline and those kind of magazines. So we, I think Seb Sebastian, who was in the IQ fan club, and he was the guy that introduced me to IQ, because I remember meeting him my first day at college, and we, you know, the first thing we talk about is, oh, what music are you into? And I said, oh, Marillion. He said, oh, yeah, I love Marillion. And he said, oh, I'm also really into IQ. I'm like, what are they like? And he said, oh, I kind of like Marillion and Genesis, which is the irony of Andy Edwards saying.
Andy Edwards would not have liked that comment.
IQ were far more blatant Genesis copyists, well, not as blatant as Marillion, you know, lest we forget Grendel, but you know, they were, you know, as guilty of it. You know, their lead singer had like the whole face paint thing, sounded a bit like Peter Gabriel, you know. So for him to kind of decry Marillion as doing something that IQ weren't is ridiculous.
Maybe what he meant was, there can only be room for one Genesis copyist in this town.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so Seb reached out to Mike Holmes, the guitarist with IQ, and we ended up going to the pub with him.
Oh, wow.
To interview him for
at 17, that's pretty good going.
I think we were 18. So we went to the pub. We had we stayed in the pub with him far beyond the point of just interviewing him.
Right.
And then I remember there a guy called Ledge. Is it Ledge? Les? His nickname might be Ledge or something. Marshall, who later became their bass player, sadly died. But later became their bass player. He rocked up to the pub as well. And so we were kind of, and then there, Roadie, who was quite iconic at the time because he was always there, a guy called Lawrence or something. We just like hung out with like IQ and their mates for the evening.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, but talk at one point came around to Marillion and the disdain.
Oh, no, it was already
was
there.
Like, this was, yeah, well, back already then. There. It had been there. Well, no, it had been there prior to that. This was 88, 87.
The disdain, I'm saying, they already had it. The IQ already
It stems from the early 80s. This was 88.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's all early 80s to
me. Okay, no. 88's not no, it's the not. Early 80s, is it?
I know.
Because this was around the time that they it was the closest brush to success IQ ever had, because their original lead singer, Pete Nichols, who was very much a Peter Gabriel clone, he had left briefly to join a band called Niadem's Ghost, which was a bit more kind of indie, kind of Cure-esque. I had their album, had some of the worst production of any record I've ever heard, but that's by the by. They released two albums with this guy called Paul Monell, who...
I've heard of him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen him live because he briefly a few years back kind of came back out of the woodwork and toured like the album that he did, the first album that he did with IQ. He seems to have disappeared again, which is a shame because I really liked the album that he put out and I loved the gig that I went to. So their two albums with Paul Monell were a lot more commercial, but that was my IQ era. That was the era of IQ I liked. I mean, I liked their early albums, their first two, Tales from the Lush Attic and The Wake. But Nom's Armo and Are You Sitting Comfortably were my IQ introductory albums, if you like. So this was around the time, because to the degree, actually, they had Are You Sitting Comfortably was coming out, and we'd been to Tower Records beforehand and I'd bought the 12-inch of Sold on You, which was Radio 1's single of the week on the, I don't know, the Philip Schofield's show or something, and it was like they supported Mike and the Mechanics, and we went to see them, and you know, supporting Mike and the Mechanics, and so it was the biggest they ever. And I rocked out with my copy of Sold and New. He said, "Oh, can I see it? I've not seen the cover yet."
No, wow.
so that was fun. Anyway, so talk had come around to Marillion, and yeah. I remember there was a lot of sort of eye rolling, and his whole thing was they weren't great musicians. You know, remember him taking the piss out of Mark Kelly having stickers on his keys for to tell him which chords were which. So, and I always remember thinking, well, does that matter?
Yeah.
Does it
matter?
It's
the result that counts, really. How you get there is, like, you know...
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
But then you also get, okay, cut to, you know, 35 years later, Andy Edwards going, Marillion were a non-virtuoso version of Genesis. And it got me thinking, because I kind of thought then, I think that's why I don't connect with a lot of prog. Because it is...
You mean neo-prog?
Neo-prog. I mean, a lot of prog full stop, but certainly neo-prog. Because the focus is on the technical musicianship rather than the emotion. And it's also, I think, why I like Marillion so much, love Marillion so much. Because instead, it's not coming from a kind of almost mathematical place. The music's not an equation. It's
a feeling.
It's driven, yeah, by feeling.
It's an expression. It's a creative expression rather than a technical expression.
But also an emotional expression.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's why I've struggled with the likes of Transatlantic, why I've struggled with, you know, a lot of, you know, even, yeah, Palace, Pendragon, even a lot of IQ, to be honest. And, you know, believe me, I've owned all IQ's albums. You know, partly that's because it's nostalgia, ironically, the title of a IQ song. But, you know, because I used to go and see them, you know, when I was 16, they were my first kind of gig experiences on my own. And but they sort of leave me cold and emotionally. And that's what a lot of these bands do to me. I struggle to connect with them on an emotional level. And yet then you get the other side of it, people like Andy Edwards kind of sort of saying that virtuoso prog, in quotes, is better in some way. And I think that's the trouble. I think so many of these bands focus on musical kind of wankery at the expense of the emotion. Sorry, go on. You're wanting to say something.
Oh, I lost my thread. Oh, I think I was just saying, you know, when he says better, that's a subjective view. Better.
Of course it is.
Better for him, not better objectively. Yeah. So, you know, fine. Everyone is right in their own subjective opinion.
Yes.
I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, there was...
I wonder how Marillion felt about IQ back in the day.
Well, at one of the Butler's Marillion weekends, me and Seb got a photo taken with Mark Kelly, and Seb was wearing an IQ t-shirt, and he said, "Oh, you're not standing next to me." Oh, what's that for?
Okay,
so
fair enough.
I think it was
fair
probably
enough,
mutual.
Then. Okay. All right. fair enough.
But you get the sense that all those kind of neo-prog bands are all sort of very close with each other.
Right.
And then there was Marillion.
Oh, interesting. I had no idea.
I mean, the Marillion was sort of, you know, famously, as we know, as we've talked about on this podcast, was so driven partly because of Fish, you know, primarily because of Fish. He pushed them through, you know, he pushed the band and pushed people to give them opportunities. And, you know, he was, you know, in those early days, the reason for their success broadly.
You read something recently, an interview with someone.
No, it was I was about to mention that, funny enough.
Oh, okay.
It was Mick Wall's podcast.
Oh, podcast.
Someone linked me to it because he's interviewed Fish for an upcoming episode. And there was, yeah, Mick Wall, who wrote Market Square Heroes, kind of the first biography of Marillion. And there's a bit of Marillion talk at the end of his most recent episode. I won't get into all of it, but... he did say in there about how I didn't quite get the point he was making, but he did mention in there how Marillion sort of said H is a better keyboard player than Mark Kelly. Now, that might be the case, but you only have to listen to sort of Mark's contributions to the last sort of 3-4 albums to kind of go, you don't need to be, you just need to be able to feel it.
Exactly. And I think it's similar to, I can't remember the name, but the other Saturday night we were watching some music on YouTube and there was like this really classic hit song. Again, I can't remember what it was or who sang it. The guy singing it did not have a good voice. I mean, he didn't have a bad voice. He didn't have a great voice. But he had that creative drive beneath his music, beneath his singing, and that made the song great. So even though he was kind of talk singing, I wish I could remember who he was or what the song was. I don't.
Well, but I think there are lots of great.
And it was like, you don't need to be perfect. It's almost like sort of saying like your intention behind your actions is really what drives the action and what will give you the result. So even if you don't have that technical perfection, if there's that creative drive that's kind of connected to your emotions or to your passion or to, you know, that part of you that wants to creatively express itself, then the result is going to connect with other people on the same level and they're going to get it. And I mean, I don't notice whether Marillion's music is technically perfect or not. I genuinely do not notice.
They're often quite self-depreciating themselves. I mean, you know, they all talk about Pete being the best musician in the band. But they've often been self... I don't think any of them read music.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sure Pete does, at least, if he knows how to play loads of instruments. But that's the point. It's like, I don't notice whether their musicianship is technically perfect or not. Mm. I do notice how their music affects me emotionally.
Exactly. And that ultimately is...
And affects the people around, affects the energy of a room, affects the energy of a big hall.
Yeah.
And the power that comes through a lot of their music is palpable in the room.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if they're able to move you to tears or bring you to elation or sadness or anything, even without being technically perfect, that's still quite an achievement.
I mean, that's something as well you can't teach.
And exactly.
That's the difference. And I'm not knocking that kind of virtuoso.
Well, no, because it has its place. And obviously there are people like who it. Really appreciate
it's
that.
It's just not for me.
Yeah.
But also I think Marillion are different as well. And I think the reason why Marillion connected with me in a way that, because I tried lots of those bands, you know, in the 80s, because it was like, you know, I'd hear them mentioned. And you know, I think the Paul Minnelli era of IQ connected with me more than either of the Pete Nichols eras, because Pete Nichols came back after Paul Minnelli left after his two albums, you know, because the lyrics have suddenly become much more obscure again, you know. So it's not just about the music for me, it's about what the songs are about. You know, lyrics and the vocals and the emotion that goes into those songs. And I think for me, a lot of prog, not all of it, admittedly, but a lot of prog is, there are plenty of prog songs that are about fairy tales and, you know, weird sci-fi things. I mean, you know, Rush have done tons of them. You know, Rush have also, you know, dedicated an entire album to Ayn Rand, but we'll...
Who?
Is she the kind of founder of libertarianism, or was it objectivism?
Oh, right.
Objectivism.
Oh, wow.
She's very, you know, the Joe Rogan's lover.
Okay.
She's a bit controversial, shall we say, because the thing she used to promote was, you know, self-interest above compassion for others and all the rest of it. So, but anyway, yeah, and that, yeah, they Rush have quite a few libertarian songs or with libertarian themes. But Marillion, for me, Fish Era and H Era, the songs always just felt so much more authentic and so much more soul-bearing than...
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
And that's the thing as well. We're talking music and lyrics. In both Fish Era and H Era, they've managed to do that.
Yeah.
They've managed to channel that side of themselves.
Two different lyricists that were... You know, and H, it took him a while. I don't... I think with Season's End, there's certainly... He's, you know, not all the lyrics are his. But he, those lyrics that are his, he's still finding his feet in terms of how much do I share, how much do I give of myself. And I think it takes him a few albums to kind of get there.
Yeah, but then when he does, it's like, oh my God, he's jumped in with both feet.
Yeah, and then by the time you get to Sky Above the Rain, for instance, it's like, Jesus, okay, you sure you want to say this? You sure? But it's, but as a result, that's why their music has always kind of connected with me. Whereas, you know, I like early Genesis, I like some later Genesis. But I've never been emotionally moved by Supper's Ready or even The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is, you know, the bizarre stories that when you look at them, they're great pieces of music.
Yeah. I think that's a good point actually, because like, let's say you listen to a song that's got someone with perfect vocals there, you know, perfect pitch, everything. Perfect execution. No, actually, I think H is a virtuoso when it comes to his voice.
He is, without a doubt.
That's aside.
He manages to balance that, though, with the emotion.
Yes, exactly. So let's say you're listening to a song with someone with the perfect voice, but it's not hitting you in the soul. It's nice and you can enjoy it. And then once it's over, you kind of forget about it. But a song that kind of transcends that mental appreciation and hits you in the heart, like hits you in the soul, that stays with you. That really stays with you. And that's the difference. Like, they're both good, but one of them just has like a more lasting impact.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? And I think, you know, I didn't love that video by Andy Edwards, but I think it helped unlock for me why there's so little prog that I really love, or so little prog that gets classed as prog that I love. Elbow, I love, you know.
But Elbow's got that ability as well. Elbow just can hit you in the heart. Or Elbow, sometimes, like, the way he phrases lyrics
He's not called
Elbow.
Oh, my
God, I'm doing it again.
He's not called Elbow, Samuel.
I told you in
my
head.
He's called Guy Garvey.
I know, I told you in my head, his name is Elbow.
I'm going to read you, sorry, something.
Guy Garvey has the, aka Elbow, has the ability to elbow you into the heart. It's like, there's just like, sometimes even like certain lyrics, it's so satisfying when you think, oh, the way that that's been expressed is just nice.
Yeah.
Yes, go.
No, it was, I just wanted to read, I love this lyric on the new Elbow album. They've got a song called Lover's Leap. And again, it's the way he sings it. It's just, now I lay me down to sleep, take me up to Lover's Leap, throw my body off the side, there to meet my waiting bride. Spray our names where we land, in your arms forevermore, take my hand. They can name the crater we make after you. And sell little statues of us, though there isn't an artist alive who could get your eyes.
Oh,
what a lyric.
Oh,
what a lyric.
Yeah,
I mean, it manages to be moving, but also funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What a skill.
Yeah.
Anyway, but in terms of other sort of bands that, I mean, I really like Stephen Wilson. He doesn't always move me emotionally. He has done some songs. I mean, I love Pariah. I love the Raven That Refused to Sing, and you know, he can with his music, but I do find his lyrics quite vague.
Say though, setting aside lyrics and vocals, just with music, it's weird how some music has the ability to hit you in the heart.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay, how and where? I can't describe how.
What's that piece of the Mission?
Yes, Ennio Morricone. Oh my God.
Oh.
And Chi Mai, and like hot, like pretty much 90% of his music just hits me in the heart. And it's like, how can a piece of music do that? So then where is the line that gets crossed from simple musical virtuosity into this kind of soul-touching quality? Where is the line? How do you do that?
Think of the Mission, right? Yeah. That piece of music, that bit where it builds.
Yeah.
It's actually quite simple, in a deceptively simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's not distracting you with a keyboard solo. It gives it...
Sorry, just imagining a keyboard solo in the Mission.
What that does, the Mission, to use it, is it breathes. So it gives you time to feel it. It gives you time to let it wash over you and go into you, you know, be absorbed. Whereas I think if a lot of that, again, a lot of neoprog for me just jumps around and it's like, here's quick guitar solo. Okay, now it's the keyboard player's turn. Now let's have a drum solo. And it's like, it's all just, for me, sort of showing off.
I'm wondering, like looking at it energetically, I'm wondering if there's like, more of a balance between yin and yang in that kind of soul-touching music. So, and certainly like the Marillion Epics do have that, and the Ennio Morricone, like the Mission and other pieces of his music do have that. So what I'm saying is there's a better blend of the hard and the soft, of the kind of the more active energy, the more receptive energy. And Marillion manages to do that. They've got, it's not all just like hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you, hit you. I mean, of course, some songs are, but most toys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, Marillion haven't always got it right.
Some songs are, but then like they're great. Let's take Care, for example. There's the soft and the hard mixed together. There's the fast, and then there's the spaces, the spaciousness. Yeah. And it's the blend of that activity and spaciousness that forms a much more, what's the word? I guess it just makes the song more enticing to listen to. It just gives you more.
I tell you what I think the secret is for a band like Marillion, because I don't know if you know this, but they write by jamming.
Do they?
Yeah, apparently. I know. It was because we finally caught up with Marillion Monthly, because, of course, we were a bit off. We'll talk about
that. No, not we.
We were a bit... I was a bit...
Own it.
I was a bit... I was having a... What's the word? Sabbatical from Marillion.
Yes.
For a few months. Finally caught up with Marillion Monthly. And, yeah, they mention it in there, how they write by jamming. I don't think it's ever been mentioned before in any interview. We should probably do an episode dedicated to that, or even perhaps an entire series.
We should jam out a series.
Yeah, this is a bit like jamming.
We do. I was just about to say.
What we don't do.
We podcast by jamming.
What we don't do, this is a perfect segue. What we don't do is what Marillion do, which allow them to ascend to that level of brilliance, which is curate what they jam.
Yeah. Well,
and I think that is the key to their songwriting, because they, you know, clearly have hundreds of hours of music that Mike Hunter sifts through and then puts before them. So Mike Hunter is part of the reason for this, you know, because he helps assemble those songs. And it's about taste, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's about what they want us to feel. And so, yeah, you know, there may be tons of shit in those hundreds of hours of jams, but they're sifting through them to find the gold.
They're editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that as much as anything is the, oh God, I don't want to be shitting on Neo Prog the whole time, but, I do think some Neo Prog, you know, you hear about these albums and they write them in 2 weeks. There's not a lot of quality control. I sometimes feel, that they just chuck everything at it. And, you know, there's not a lot of consideration to the feeling. It's...
I mean, I guess it's the difference between just jamming and writing by jamming.
Yeah.
You know, writing by jamming, you're stopping to edit out bits.
Yes, but, I mean, look, again, it's like each to their own because...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think Marillion necessarily... I don't think Marillion's emotional qualities are probably recognised by anyone, everyone. You know, I think there are lots of fans who probably, you know, who clearly like both types of prog, you know, who clearly like Marillion and can like Pendragon or, I don't know, I'm trying to, or Spock's Beard or, you know, Flower Kings.
Oh, I like that name.
The Tangent. All these bands that I've really tried with and can't get on with. Yeah, there are lots of people that like both. But, you know, I and that's okay because I think not everyone is looking for that emotional connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, not looking for...
Or some people might just like both. They might, they might be like, I don't need the emotional connection. This, like, I love it in Marillion, but I also like just like listening to Virtuosos. Nice music. Yeah. By itself.
Not all of it's nice, though, is it?
It's nice to them. Otherwise, they wouldn't listen to it. It's your subjective view.
Objectively, it's not nice, though, is it, much of it? You know, and I've said this for years. Marillion have got way more in common with a band like Elbow. Sorry to keep going on about Elbow, but...
Elbow's our artist of the week.
But they have. I've thought it ever since Elbow's first album came out. They've got way more in common with bands like that.
Which is interesting, because I loved Elbow before I'd even heard of Marillion.
Yeah, there you go. And I guess it is an endless source of frustration to me when you go on to Apple Music or Spotify or whatever, and you either see Marillion in prog playlists with all these other neo prog bands, or you see Marillion, you know, similar artists to Marillion, Flower Kings or, you know, Spock's Beard or whatever. And that shouldn't be. They should be there with, I mean, all right, Pink Floyd, fair enough. You know, I think Pink Floyd, fair enough. Yeah, Pink Floyd are not like those other bands either. They're much more in a paddock with Marillion. Mm. Paddock?
They're in a paddock now.
Yeah, being milked. in a paddock with Marillion. Prog paddock. That'd be a good name for podcasts. I can already think of the thumbnail. It's the Pink Floyd's Atom Heart Mother cover, which has got cows on it. Anyway, then it would have my face and your face on the cows.
The prog paddock.
Or it would have your face on one of the cows and me drinking from the other.
Okay.
Tanya, your face.
It's only because I'm stopping myself saying something.
Oh, yeah?
No, I'm not going to say it. No, I'm not, because you're not going to edit it out. So I
won't edit it out.
Yeah, so I'm keeping it to myself.
Does it sound rude?
Maybe.
Were you going to say nice?
Sorry?
What were you going to say?
No,
hot.
I wasn't going to say anything like that. Just like, let's move on.
What was I even talking about?
I'm not going to say something like that. Let's move
on. It's quite a hot image though, isn't it?
Move on.
It is
on.
A hot image.
No, it's not. Someone has a cow.
We go. what was I even talking about? Yeah. So,
the prog paddock.
Yeah, I kind of always think, you know, Marillion should be lumped alongside Talk Talk, Kate Bush, Elbow, not these neo-prog bands. And it's such an injustice. It's such an injustice. But it is what it is.
Mm.
There was going to be something else I wanted to talk about, but I don't know if we've got time now.
Oh, why is it a long topic?
Well, it's racism. No, genuinely, it was racism.
What, how long have we been recording
An
for?
An hour.
How long do you think we'll need to talk about?
About what? To deal, to sort out
to
racism.
Deal with the topic of racism.
To sort out racism. I don't know, kind of like 30 seconds.
Don't Don't be racist. Full stop.
It's just because I did go through Andy Edwards' other videos. And he does try to tackle racism in one of them. He had a video. Well, I first saw his apology. Which wasn't an apology. It was deeply sarcastic. But I think this is more...
An apology about what?
He did a video, which I did watch, about why he doesn't think jazz should be classed as black music. But then, of course, it went off into going on about critical race theory, racial Marxism, his views on slavery and George Floyd.
This is above my pay grade to comment on.
And moaning about those on the left.
There was a big topic.
There was a reason why I wanted to talk about it.
You've started it now.
No, I'm not going to, because we'll save it. No, it's a good episode, because I'll tell you what the episode is. I wanted to talk about why prog and why Marillion's audience is so predominantly white.
I would like to talk about that.
I have theories about it, and it's something I've thought about for a long time. Because this is all I'll say for now, is there have been times in my putting my foot into sort of the prog sphere, I've kind of gone, is there a bit of a... Not that there's anything wrong with being right wing. I mean, obviously being far right, like Sanya is, that's
Stop!
Bad.
Stop! What do I have to do to prove that wrong?
Stop going to those rallies. That would help. Stop producing that literature that you've been putting through people's doors.
Oh, I've been producing literature now.
Yes. Sanya Stormkeller, your newsletter.
Oh my goodness.
There has been... I just had these hints over the years at times, sometimes more than hints, that there might... that prog attracts a slightly larger number of... dodgy racists. There, I've just
really?
Said it. Yeah.
Okay. And we're ending the episode on this note. We didn't even get to Montreal.
No, well, it is what it is. What I'm saying is, dear listener, is you're all racist. You're all racist.
Oh, my goodness.
That's how we're ending
At least
the
it's
episode.
Not just me, so.
No, I'm not saying that. I just wanted, because I did do some research into it after Andy Edwards' video.
Right. I'm going to have to watch his video now to prepare for the next episode.
And some of this comes from my having one foot in the IQ world at points. Not that I'm saying Andy Edwards is a racist, although in his sarcastic apology video, he does hold up a sign saying sorry for being a racist. So, I mean, Jesus.
Wait, are you joking or are you being serious?
He actually does. Well, he's got his mouth taped shut.
Was he joking?
It was such a sarcastic apology video.
Okay.
He just basically doubles down, albeit in a sarcastic way, on his points.
All right. So I guess if people want to understand better, then maybe they can watch his video.
We don't, because you might get radicalised.
What?
Yeah, don't you watch it, Sanya, for God's sakes. God, you'll be goose-stepping around the house if you do.
Oh, no.
Of course. I just thought it might be an interesting topic to explore in the future.
All right. Yeah. Let's do that.
I mean, even... why Marillion's audience remained so white even after H joined the band. Remember the Rapping Quartz?
Yeah, we'll never forget the Rapping Quartz.
Yeah. I just want to end this, though, by the way, talking about... Because this was going to be part of my... when I was going to be talking about it. Beyonce's new album. I've mentioned it to you already.
Oh, yes, you like it.
It's so bloody good. It's because
I'm going to have to listen to it.
It was back in... Was it 2016? I said she performed at the Country Music Association Awards, and she performed with the Chicks, formerly known as the Dixie Chicks, and there was massive backlash.
Why?
She wasn't welcome.
What? Why?
Do I have to spell it out? Because she's black.
Oh my God, in 2016, they still had that attitude.
Well, they still have it today. Have you not watched the news
haven't.
Have you not been paying attention for the last 8 years?
No. Wow.
Anyway, so there was massive backlash, and I think it really hurt her. And so for the new album, Cowboy Carter, she started looking into the origins of country music and found that A, it has African-American origins, and B, apparently half of all cowboys were black. You don't see that in like Westerns or anything like that. So but she grew up loving country music and then wasn't welcome when she...
Wow.
So she did a whole country album and ended up going...
Beyonce not being welcome. That's like if Beyonce's not welcome, what hope is there for the rest of us?
But it was, but consequently a new album brilliantly got to the top of the country charts. And it's so good because it sort of mixes what she does with... But there's also, it's really what I would class as progressive because there's sort of little linking bits. It does some really interesting stuff. It's like Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
He's progressive in my eyes.
A lot of
sort of rap and hip hop artists are.
Yeah.
They often, their albums are, will be concept albums.
He's got some great songs.
Yeah, a lot of their albums will be concept albums and have like sort of linking bits and skits. I remember Outkast years ago, Hey Ya, the album that came out.
It
was really a concept album. It's like a double album. And yeah, there were lots of sort of bits like that that I just thought, surely this is prog. This is what prog should be.
Mm.
Anyway. My point was, I just thought it was interesting because country is considered white. Mm. And then I just started thinking, wow, I'd love Beyonce to take on prog, which is so white.
So you said she
white.
Kind of has a little bit in
she
this
She has
new
a little
album.
Bit, but actually kind of looking at prog and that, because prog is, so I've started getting onto the topic that I was going to talk about and then said I wasn't.
Well, then save it for...
I will save it, but I just want to say that prog is often seen as very white and very English, like particularly English and pastoral and stuff. But a lot of prog also has its origins in jazz. Now, admittedly, according to Andy Edwards, former IQ drummer, jazz isn't black. I'm sure a lot of black artists would
disagree.
Scholars would disagree with that. But I just thought, I don't know, how amazing would be someone of that stature with those kind of production resources, to sort of properly...
I need to listen to Beyonce's new album now. Elbow's new album.
And Elbow's. You've got a couple to listen to. Oh. Yeah. Anyway, I hope I haven't said anything controversial. It wasn't meant to be.
Well, you always do, so...
I always do. Well, yeah, I know, but as long as I don't get cancelled, that's mainly what I want, not to get cancelled. What do you want not to get cancelled? Want to not get cancelled?
Yeah, that's still a negative, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you want?
To stay uncancelled?
That doesn't count.
How do I say it?
I would like to continue being able to speak freely.
Sounds like a free speech absolutist.
Oh my God, here we go.
Oh, yeah, now she's gone from Andrew Tate to Elon Musk. In one episode.
I've got a new sci-fi car coming out.
That's exactly how he talks.
I like his new car. It looks really cool.
Don't say that.
Oh, am I not allowed to say that?
Again.
It does look cool, though.
Yeah, imagine rocking up to one of your rallies in that. Chucking your pamphlets out the window. Right, everyone. We're not going to talk about Montreal, are we?
I guess
this week.
Not.
I haven't got a lot to say about it. You seem to, for some reason.
I don't think I have a lot to say, but we'll save it then for the next...
Well, hopefully you'll have done the rest of your notes.
Yeah.
Next week will be Sounds That Can't Be Made part... I think it's actually part 5.
Is it? We've done 4 parts on Sounds That Can't Be Made
Might
already.
Be part 4. We've done a
cray
lot.
Cray cray.
Right. Thanks for still being here. I've not got anything else to say. Bye. Not going to say goodbye.
Oh.
So rude. Oh, so rude. If you had guests over... and they were leaving and you did what... And I said goodbye to them and you did what you just did, which was just stare at them.
I was letting you... I thought it was a nice ending, you just saying bye.
Why don't you...
You didn't need me to ruin our guests, it by adding to it.
Our guests. And you literally... You just stared at them as they walk out. So rude. How to make them feel like they weren't welcome or that you're weird and creepy.
I was giving your weirdness space to be
weird. I said bye. How is that weird?
Let's
try again. Bye, everyone.
Okay, everybody. I hope you have a lovely
that's just sarcastic.
Rest of the day.
Like, if someone came to your house...
I'm imagining how I would say bye if they were guests at our house.
Right,
I'd give them
voice.
A hug. Oh, hug for you. Have a lovely
Why
trip
are you saying
home.
That sounds sarcastic? If bad people go and you say, oh, bye, thanks for coming, see you later, safe journey home. Not, oh, goodbye, thank you for coming. Oh, I'm going to give you a hug. Oh, don't get killed on the way home.
Killed?
That's what it sounded like. It sounded sarcastic. Dark. Oh, thanks so much for coming. So loved having you here.
Why are you bringing in things like, oh, you don't get killed on the way home? That's
well, is that
dark.
The way you were saying it was if I went, oh, I hope you don't get killed on the way home. That sounds sincere.
That's awful, Paul.
Like, thanks for coming. Please don't get killed
That's
on the way
horrible.
Home.
That's horrible.
But I said it in a nice way. You said it in a sarcastic
also,
way.
Also, that makes me feel superstitious. Now, like, I need to, like...
Smudge yourself with some sage. Gonna have a bath in sage. God, this is the longest goodbye ever. Bye, everyone.
Bye.